Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Friday, January 20th, 2017. If you're joining us off-net or online, we are in Alaska's state capitol on the fifth floor, Senate Finance. With me this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
Morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Morning.
Senator Olson.
Morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff. And we should be joined shortly by Senator and Vice Chairman Bishop. On the agenda today is David Teal. He is presenting from the Legislative Finance Division an overview of the FY18 operating budget. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? Senator Dunleavy.
Just to the chair, I just thought, I mean, we all recognize today is a special day, and just want to make note of the transfer of power that just occurred in Washington, D.C. That's been a hallmark of this democracy. And so it's not about the president, it's about us. And it's a very, very special day, a very special event.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. I watched the inauguration and some of the comments from President Donald Trump this morning, and then needed to get to the Capitol, and his comments were finished at that point. It's also the first Friday that we honor the people of Alaska, Alaska Natives, with some folks wearing this morning cuss bucks. Cuss bucks are regionally distinct. They are worn by both male and females, and it began in earnest many years ago with Mary Sattler, at the time was Representative Kapsner, and in tribute to her, many of us in the legislature began honoring the people of Alaska by wearing cuss bucks on Friday. And so some people have them, some people don't. Sometimes it's hard to find a seamstress down here in Juneau, but just on behalf of the people that we represent, all people, Cuss Buck Friday is a privilege for me to be able to put on a cuss buck. With that, welcome Vice Chairman Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Teal, if I could have you join us at the microphone, identify yourself for the record, and then please present an overview of the governor's FY18 budget.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm David Teal, Director of the Legislative Finance Division. With our perspective on the governor's FY18 budget request, and that is probably possible to do that with just a fiscal summary, but I think it will add some perspective and some information if we start with Figure 1, which gives a little bit of history. Before going into this, I should probably say that our fiscal summary doesn't differ significantly from the governor's. It doesn't match precisely, but that is more a matter of where on the fiscal summary numbers are placed. And I should also note that we reposted the fiscal summary this morning. It does not match the fiscal summary in the introduction. That's because primarily the REAA fund, rural education attendance areas, we have a legal opinion now that says that that money can be spent without appropriation. So it just moves lines on the fiscal summary. It's still reported, but it is a different summary online than you've seen in the introduction. So here to set the stage for a discussion of the fiscal summary, you see this in this figure, revenue is the line, and I'll explain the dashed line in a moment. The bars are expenditures, which, as you can see, trended upward from FY07 through FY14, and then fell fairly rapidly through 17 and 18. But note that FY18 is indistinguishably close. If I could, this mouse is not showing anything on the screen, and it would be much easier.
back on the record, Senate Finance. Mr. Teal, for those that are following us at home, if you go to akleg.gov, click on the Senate Finance Committee. There are documents available everywhere. Ledge Finance has this wonderful book, the fiscal year 2018. It's in teal for Mr. Teal this morning. It's called Legislative Fiscal Analyst. Overview of the governor's request. So multiple years are there for comparison for the general public, and it is very beneficial to legislators to have that work done. Mr. Teal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there's some key points that you can take away from this chart. The first is that FY18 is the sixth consecutive year of deficits, and these are not just small deficits of the type where you get to the end of the year and your revenue forecast was slightly off and you're 2% low on your funding. These are mostly fiscal gaps that we know about in advance as we prepare the budget, and it's clearly an imbalance between the revenue that we have and the amount of money that we spend. Structural deficit, if you want to call it that, long-term deficit that we know about in advance of preparing the budget. We continue to struggle with these deficits despite the massive spending reductions that you see in this chart. We're going from a peak of $9.4 billion spending in 14 down to $5 billion in FY17 and 18. So that's a $4.4 billion reduction. And at this point, I think I want to respond to Senator Majicki's. I think it was you who asked about total spending. And did it follow the same pattern? Most Alaskans know that oil prices have fallen. And some people remember when oil was $9 a barrel, and I think it's understandable that many people would think, if we made it through the period of $9 oil, why is $45 or $50 oil a problem? And I think they may conclude or believe that government spending has just gone up and up and up, despite the fact that revenue has been going down for the last 5 or 6 years. But figure two here shows what actually happened. The blue bars on the bottom are unrestricted general funds. Same line as you saw in figure two. And then it has the other funds, designated funds, other funds, and federal funds stacked on top of this. You can see that those bars are pretty constant at $6 billion. So the pattern is the same. Now, you can see that there's a big jump there in FY15, and that is the $3 billion deposit from the CBR to retirement funds. Other than that, it's pretty much add $6 billion to the UGF pattern. We have not continued to spend in total. Similarly,
please finish your comment.
No.
Mr. Teal, for those at home, does designated fund include receipts of the university for tuition?
It does. That is, in fact, the largest of the designated funds.
And so sometimes people think that we should go after cutting designated funds, but it's sometimes revenue being generated from other sources to support activities that may be discrete from agency performances at a state government for what our communities might be thinking of. Is that accurate?
Madam Chair, it is. But that's a more complex topic than many think it is, because there are some designated funds that are really unrestricted. The legislature has simply identified them as designated. The alcohol funds. We know that that is a general fund, and that it's simply money deposited into the alcohol fund, at which time it's designated for certain purposes, rehabilitation and other things. So that in that sense, cutting a designated fund is equivalent to cutting unrestricted general funds. There are other examples. You can say use where park receipts in Department of Natural Resources, those simply cover DNR's cost of doing business. They're retained. Similarly, the university tuition. And in most of those cases, the university may be the strongest case. I'm not sure how the students would respond to the legislature taking university tuition and spending it for ferry operations in Southeast Alaska, for instance. You could do that, but designated funds are typically designated for a reason, and it's that reason is often legislative desire to use money in a specific way.
Thank you. We do have, we are experiencing, for the public following us, we're on slide four. We need to take a brief at ease so that we can get the technology up and running again. So brief at ease. We're back on the record. We're still on slide four, and we're talking about designated receipts. Mr. Teel, could you provide for Senate Finance a graph, a chart that breaks out designated funds into similar type of categories? So as an example, it was my understanding before I asked the question that the university receipts were a huge portion of that. But in these tough times, as we've seen from the administration, people are looking at designated funds and seeing if they are being utilized for the people of Alaska in the highest and best use. So we would like a little bit further dive onto the designated funds so that we can see them a little bit differently.
I'd be happy to do that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You asked for a graph, actually, and right, we're heading in the same direction, but I'd actually like a detailed document about what is receipt authority directly connected to a corresponding expenditure, and what has just sort of been, we shouldn't use the word squirreled away, but those are the accounts that we're going to be interested in. I think we're going to spend a lot more time on DGF this year than we typically have, so whatever detail you can provide would be very much appreciated.
Thank you. And I would point you to the resource book also. The administration did an excellent job in pointing out changes in their introduction. They pointed out changes, and they did dedicate, I believe, Chapter 1 to talk about what we're talking about today. So thank you very much. Mr. Teel, please continue.
Just a comment on the designated general funds. You may be interested to know, and I'll certainly include it with the breakdown of designated funds. This last session, or interim, I should say, we broke down designated funds used for non-designated purposes. That is all flagged in the budget now, and we can point out to you whenever that occurs. So I'll include that with the the information we provide. And I this graph is not something that I normally would have included, but I think it's a valid question about what are we spending. And I know that OMB was going to provide the information, but I think it's important to just get it on the record instead of having it provided back channel. So similarly, a question on positions. Here in Figure 3, you can see that we had a peak of 25,000 positions, and this is budgeted positions. This is not paychecks. So our numbers do differ from those that OMB provided. We are now down to 22, which is a reduction of approximately 2,400 positions, or 10% from the peak. Now, back to Figure 1. At the same time expenditures declined by $4.4 billion, revenue declined by $5.1 billion. And here on the line, you can see we're talking about from this point, which is $7.5 billion, down to $2.4 billion now. Now, in the good old days of high oil prices, a budget of $5 billion, if you take that over here, would have typically produced a surplus of about $3 billion. Now we see that $5 billion deficit budget is accompanied by a deficit of $2.7 billion. And I don't believe that crisis is too strong a word to use for our fiscal, to describe our fiscal situation. We built massive reserves during the times when revenue was very high. And, of course, we've been spending those reserves very quickly because of these large deficits. So I think a look at our reserves is also useful. Figure 4 shows that at one time between the CBR in the gray and the SBR, we had over $16 billion in reserves. Large deficits, burning through them rapidly, we're down to about $2 billion, which is insufficient to get us through FY19. And that's assuming business as usual, and by that I mean sticking to existing revenue sources and using the CBR to plug the deficits that occur.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, and no reductions, correct?
And no reductions,
thank you.
So you'll note in this figure that spending includes spending from the earnings reserve account, and that includes both dividends and inflation proofing. That's a big difference from Pat Pitney's presentation the other day. You may recall that virtually every figure she showed, she said, excluding dividends. You have to take it one way or the other. You can't exclude dividends in FY18 and include them in prior years, and you just have a mess trying to compare. She chose to remove dividends from the 18 budget. We went the other direction and said we're going to include dividends as general fund expenditures because that's what the governor's budget did. And then, of course, to make it comparable to past years, we also included those dividend expenditures and inflation proofing, if it occurred, in the expenditure line or bars. So, obviously, then, we had to adjust the revenue line upward as well by those same amounts. And in 17 and 18, the dashed line indicates the addition of POMV payouts. And for those that don't know, POMV refers to percent of market value, specifically market value of the permanent fund. And the governor's proposal is to pay out a percentage, as drafted, it's 5.25% of five-year prior balance. In FY18, the total payout is about $2.5 billion. After you net dividends of about $700 million, you're left with an increase in your revenue of $1.8 billion. Which brings up what I consider to be the most important point or issue in the governor's budget, and that's the fact that there is a POMV payout. Further, that payout is included as a general fund revenue, and that appropriations from the ERA, the earnings reserve account of the permanent fund, are classified as unrestricted general funds. Now, to understand what that means, I think you have to understand how spending from the earnings reserve account has been treated in the past. This should help do that. This is taken from 16, but it's the same as all prior fiscal summaries for many years. You can see here that on line 55, for designated general funds, we're reporting spending of $941 million. And beneath that, you can see that dividends were about $1.4 billion. It should be clear that the 941 does not include the $1.4 billion. What that means is that the earnings reserve expenditures, dividends and inflation proofing, have been off budget. They've been excluded from expenditures and excluded from revenue. They are below the line. They're reported but not rolled into any totals. So back to figure one, the payout, $2.5 billion net out 700 in dividends, and you come up with the 1.8 difference shown there. FY17 is similar. So the governor's budget, along with the new SB 128, I don't know what the number is this year, but I think it's been read across, the Permanent Fund Protection Act, whatever number it has, means that revenue now covers about 84% of revenue instead of somewhere in 30% of revenue. So it fills a tremendous amount of the deficit. 17 looks the same because in the governor's budget, he also requested a payout in 17, payout POMV from the permanent fund earnings. So I've had many questions on this, mostly along the lines of, he can't do that. How can he do that? And of course he can request it. It doesn't mean you have to do it, but there's nothing illegal in any way about requesting a supplemental appropriation. In fact, you could look at it as the Permanent Fund Protection Act did not pass last year. The governor took a couple steps to essentially implement it anyway. The first step was vetoing dividends back to the level that would have been funded by the bill. The second step was in submitting the 18 operating budget, in which he says it may not have passed, but here in the appropriation bill, I'm asking for the payout that would have occurred in 17. Senator Dunleavy said, asked me, and well, we were at ease, if I was going to speak about what that really does, and all I can say is that essentially the legislature passed a supermajority vote for access to the CVR for FY17. Normally, you would have expected to take about $3 billion from the CVR. With a payout in 17 from the earnings reserve account to the general fund, the 17 deficit is not $3 billion anymore. It's close to half a billion because of the $2.5 billion payout. So essentially, the CBR balance is $2.5 billion higher than it would have otherwise been. You can look at that as you didn't really need to take money from the ERA and put it in the general fund in 17. It would have been just as easy, just as effective to take money from the ERA and deposit it directly into the CVR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund.
Madam Chair.
Senator Maticki.
Just as easy to deposit, not quite as easy to extract.
Madam Chair, that's certainly true. The earnings reserve account can be used with a simple majority vote. The constitutional budget reserve account requires a supermajority three-quarter vote.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Real quick, David, in your 84% description of the differential increase in the budget this year, I just for my curiosity, is that $75 million gasoline tax increase factored in that?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, it is. And I should clarify, when I say 84%, that's revenue covers 84% of expenditures. Without POMV payout, it covers about a third of expenditures. And yes, the gas tax is built into the governor's budget. And that adds $35 million this year, another $35 on top of that next year.
Senator Dunleavy.
Hey, Chair, as David mentioned in a break, I asked him a question, and it was really a question for Ms. Pitney. We didn't have enough time when we were going through it, but just trying to understand there appears to be on paper maybe a shift in philosophy, where last year there was discussions about moving money into the permanent fund to endow it. There appeared to be in this budget a reversal of moving money out into the CBR. And so I don't know if we'll have time down the road, or maybe I can just grab Ms. Pitney on the side and just have her explain it to me, but I'm just trying to find out if there was a change of philosophy.
And again, I can report what they did, what the effect is, but if you want to know why they did that, I'm not the person to ask. So the bottom line here is that the earning reserve account's off-budget status has been a reporting problem since the inception of the permanent fund. The courts have clearly stated that the earnings reserve account is available for appropriation for any purpose, any time. That would normally cause us to classify the earnings reserve account as unrestricted general funds. And there, I'm not talking just about the earnings in a year. It's the entire balance of the earnings reserve that would be available for spending. That's problematic because even in our deficit years, like this year, the $8 billion to $10 billion that's in the earnings reserve balance would show as revenue in FY18. So legislators, the public, anyone just looking at the numbers would say, so what's the problem? You've got $10 billion in revenue and a $5 billion budget. So it would be very distorting to draw up budget documents that showed you with massive surpluses every year. And I have to say, this treatment predates me, and I've been here a long time. So it's not a decision that I made. It's a decision that others made in response to trying to report what's available to spend without causing you to spend much more than you actually have. Bottom line is the permanent fund earnings and the balance have been omitted from general fund revenue, and that's not the best method of accounting. But as soon as we reclassify the earnings reserve expenditures from designated general funds to unrestricted general funds, there are huge implications of that. And we can discuss that. You might want to get Director Pitney back in front of you to ask her about those implications. So it should have been done long ago, some people may argue, but it wasn't really a pressing issue for us to address when the CBR balance was high, when we had surpluses, and when the earnings reserve account was actually used only for dividends and inflation proofing. By statute, the fund was designated for those purposes. It was used for those purposes and nothing else. Well, under the governor's budget, it's unavoidable to make that reclassification. It is now unrestricted general funds because there is no inflation proofing. That was one of the designated uses. The dividends do not come from the earnings reserve account. They come from the general fund. Neither of the designated uses are in effect, and in fact, the only use of the earnings reserve account is to put it into the unrestricted general funds. So you have to ask, well, where is the designation here? In the governor's presentation of the budget, there's essentially no choice but to call the earnings reserve undesignated general funds. Now on to the fiscal summary itself. I don't think anyone can see this. And I'm not going to try to walk through it from this slide. I do want to point out some things on this slide, and that's that we have four categories of funds. I think you're all familiar with them. They are unrestricted general funds, designated general funds, other state funds, and federal funds. That's in increasing order of, it's in decreasing order of flexibility. You can spend unrestricted general funds for anything. On the federal side, they generally have a very specific purpose. We've also present the fiscal summary in four types of expenditures, four categories. That's agency operations, statewide items, the capital budget, and the permanent fund. So only one number really matters at this point, and I'm not sure you can read it. It's this 121.5 change in agency operations from 17 to 18. But to make it easier to see what happened there, you can look at figure 6. The budget that you left agencies with, or the state with, and this is post-vetoes, was $3.9 billion. As the governor builds from that level, you may know that we use an incremental budget process. For many states, that means everything is in the base, and it's hard to remove things from the base. We haven't done that for many years. We put one-time items and identify them as such in the budget, which means they come out the following year automatically. So the governor comes out of the gate here with a $63 million reduction to start FY18. There were some temporary increments. Those are just things that you decided as a legislature you were going to give them for a 3 or 5 or however many year period. You have some maintenance increments. Those are specifically related to obtaining the supermajority vote last year. They're language additions or increments that were put in last year with specific instructions to include them in the base. So they are added to the base. You have salary increments. Generally, salary increments are contractual agreements. This year, most of this $15.8 million is health insurance increases. And they are not contractual, but if you weren't to fund them, that would be the equivalent of taking an unallocated reduction. It would hit everybody pretty much equally, anywhere there is staff. You have some minor little things. So basically, the governor starts out with a $30 million reduction from FY17. He then adds another $38 million in decrements, offset by $31 million in increments, and then you have fund changes. And that is the largest of the actions here. You talked about designated general funds and how they may be the same as general funds in some, unrestricted general funds in some cases. The good example of that is fish and game funds. The legislature raised fish and game fees, hunting and fishing licenses last year. there's additional federal money flowing into the Fish and Game Fund, which is classified as other. Well, the reason you raised those fees was so that the Fish and Game Fund could be used to fund more activities. When that happens, you reduce your UGF spending. And so some of this fund change is due to that. Most of it, roughly $70 million here, is due to the motor fuels tax. And that is going from UGF here to DGF. So the governor's budget request is 3.7 something, and there you are back to your $121 million decrease from the 17 budget for agency operations.
Senator Dunleavy.
The chair, you mentioned insurance. Last year, in the waning days of one of the special sessions, in special session, we were asked to appropriate $50+ million for an insurance issue. Mm-hmm. Do you see that reflected in this budget going forward?
Yes, through the chair. That was a $55 million increment that goes into a fund, which is then used to, well, for lack of a better word, subsidize premiums for high-risk, high-health-risk people. That is an ongoing deposit. The way the law reads is that $55 million of insurance premiums is deposited into that fund on an annual basis, not one-time basis, and that money in the fund can be used to pay claims, or it's reinsurance, actually, for Primera, who is the only provider in Alaska. So in the budget this year, it's fairly complicated. I don't know that you need to go into it, but they're switching from the appropriations, which go by fiscal year, to the need for the premiums, which goes by calendar year. So you'll see a supplemental and then an FY18. Everything's multi-year. It's probably more detailed than we need to get in this meeting.
Senator Dunleavy.
So just to clarify, it's considered to be an ongoing effort?
Through the chair, yes.
Senator Dunleavy, we will have the folks who presented to us at the close of the last session before us. They owe us a report on how they were going to fix it because we explicitly said we would not fund that repeatedly.
One more thing I should say. You can't see it on this table. You can't see it in the fiscal summary, but it's something that you should be aware of. That's that pupil transportation is not fully funded. It is funded at the same level as it was funded in 17, and in 17 there was a $6.35 million veto of transportation funds. So you won't see it because it's unchanged from 17, but it is not fully funded. Then moving on to statewide, fairly quickly here, again, debt service relates to school funding. The governor vetoed school debt reimbursement, as I'm sure you're all aware, and in the 18 budget it is restored. So debt service is up. Community assistance in 17 management plan was zero. It was funded in other ways, and I'm showing only unrestricted UGF here, but you'll note that there is no funding of any kind for community assistance in the FY18 budget. You discussed that the other day.
Senator Dunleavy.
It's a small item, through the chair, it's a small item, but do you see reflected in here any changes to what is referred to as the trails money, where there's snow machine receipt, purchase of snow machine receipts, and last year there was a veto of that in the budget?
Through the chair, that's restored in the capital budget, $250. Oil and gas tax credits, the governor vetoed those down to the statutory minimum last year. This year it's up substantially, $44 million up to $74 million. Again, that's the statutory minimum. The REA school fund is the reason we changed the fiscal summary. It in concert with the veto of school debt reimbursement. He vetoed, the governor vetoed money from the REA school fund deposit. That's back up to the full statutory match of the school debt reimbursement, so $40 million there. Retirement costs, again, you can't see anything here. It looks the same, but remember that last year you used higher education money, about $90 million, to pay a portion of the state assistance to retirement. The expectation was that the state assistance would fall this year by $90 million. It did not. It fell by about $30 million. So there's still $60 million of higher education fund money used to pay those retirement costs. The capital budget goes from $96 million last year to $115 million this year. That increase is no surprise. We knew that last year there were some fund sources used that were not going to be available to us this year, and the budget is still essentially the minimum required to match federal money. So here you also see total spending of $4.3 billion and a deficit of $2.7 billion. And now we get into treatment of the permanent fund. It's easier to just switch to slide 9, where you can see the base and then the governor's request. The base is defined here. It is revenue excluding the permanent fund POMV payout and additional royalties under the Permanent Fund Act. And to explain that, the Permanent Fund Act repeals the statutory 25% on new fields that's deposited to the permanent fund, roughly $55 million annually. And the governor's proposed spending with dividends classified as DGF. So that's how you get your $2.7 billion deficit. You can go to the governor's request, where we've classified spending as reflected, or it reflects the bill itself. So here you have the additional $2.5 billion payout from the earnings reserve account, the extra money flowing in, or that flows to the general fund rather than to the permanent fund. You have the same level of expenditures, but to them you add the expenditures for dividends, the capital income fund, because it's another fund that comes, that is loaded from the earnings reserve account, which is now general funds, and then you have some other expenditures. The $56 million corresponds pretty much to that. So you end up with a deficit of less than $1 billion. That was shown in chart one. It's same numbers. So now you may want to look at holes or what, you know, what the governor's budget doesn't contain. Here are things you may have to or want to deal with as you go through the budget process. If motor fuel tax increase is not adopted, that's going to increase general fund spending by $70 million because the fuel will be classified as unrestricted general funds. Community assistance is not funded. You had a discussion the other day about perhaps funding that with a supplemental. I think Senator Hoffman's well aware, and the rest of you probably are too, that a supplemental appropriation doesn't really address the problem because that money won't be there when the communities are developing their budget. Eventually, they will get a $30 million payout in 19. So we're really talking about a payout here in 19. No matter what happens, communities will get $30 million distributed in 2018. But if you don't put $30 million back in, the distribution in 19 will fall to $20 million. If you wait on that, but communities will develop their budget based on a $20 million payout, And the good news is it'll be up instead of down, because if there's a supplemental, it would go back up to the $30 million payout. If you were to replace the higher ed money that's used for retirement assistance with UGF, that would cost you $58 million. There is no money in the budget for deferred maintenance or education projects of any kind. And by that, I mean no school construction money, no school major maintenance money, either at the K-12 or university level. If you wanted to pay more than the minimum $74 million for oil tax credits, you need to consider that expenditure and any others. So there's a total here of $150 to $250 million that you as a legislature may be forced to address, and those bring the deficit up to slightly over $1 billion, just the one shown here.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, through the chair. Just to clarify, so from your perspective, the budget that the administration sent over, is it a fully funded balanced budget, meaning the expenditures match either existing revenues, projected revenues, or revenue measures to be put in place?
Through the chair, it is not. It is not a balanced budget on a cash flow basis. You're still left with a deficit of $1 billion, and that deficit is filled in the governor's budget with a supermajority vote required draw from the constitutional budget reserve. So in that sense, it is a balanced budget.
Senator Machicki.
I know we have to go. I'll visit with Mr. Teal a little bit later. He generally does not leave two slots that say other without having something in mind, so we'll... Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Is there anything else to come before the committee? The agenda for this coming Monday, Mr. Teal will be back in front of us again to discuss the intent language produced by his office, and Megan Wallace from Legislative Legal will provide a legal perspective on the intent language that we inserted in last year's budgets so that we can understand the follow-through from the administration. With that, we're adjourned.